Welcome to the second episode of Haunted Hills Podcast. I'm Tegan Dawson. Today we're talking about the history of the Brown Coal Mine, a small town with big stories. In this podcast, you'll meet the butcher, baker, maybe the candlestick maker, the healers, everyday heroes, and many, many others. The town is chock-a-block of personalities who lived there forever or passed by, adding to the complex small town tapestry. The Brown Coal Mine in the Latrobe Valley is set high on a hill below the Harmony Hills. It is north of the Haunted Hills, Lake Narracan, Moe, and the now demolished Yulon Township. Some people believe this is the new Yulon, but it isn't. Yulon lives on in houses all over Victoria, and as you'll see, the Brown Coal Mine was here before Yulon. There is so much to tell you, and I'm going to tell you through the art of story. And if you want to know more, you can check out this town on hauntedhills.com.au or visit the Old Brown Coal Mine Museum on 3rd Street in Yulon North. Originally, it was just known as The Hill. Then it took on the name of the mine, Brown Coal Mine. The mine it was built right next to. The Brown Coal Mine experienced a boom as rumours surfaced that the state government was taking over the operations of the mine and building power stations. With the Brown Coal Mine, we could argue in this context, the candlestick maker is the state electrical company, which allowed people to use globes instead of burning wax. But we'll explore the SEC in episode 11, Yulon, the Perfect Garden City. In my retelling of history, I like to focus on the people, because the town creates commonality between all people, creating relationships through the need of product, services, and industry. The people are what make the town. The first settler arrived in 1884. Digging into the base of Harmony Hills, he carved out a hovel not unlike Mr. Baggins from Lord of the Rings. He compacted the dirt into a floor and carved a wooden front door. That all rhymes. He planted willows to continue his love of woodwork, giving him a hobby, whittling cricket bats in his spare time. His name was Anders Andersen from Norway. The creek flowing in front of his hut was named after him, and he owned 135 acres on the north side of the creek, at the end of the boundary of the Morwell Shire. He worked in Traralgon. He walked those 18 miles to Traralgon, staying there in a boarding house from Monday to Thursday, and may have still been in the Brown Coal Mine area in 1924. Or maybe it was a relative who moved up in the social status there. Harry and Fanny Mears are also considered a founding family. Once they were married, they began farming out at 10 Mile Creek in Narracan until bushfires burnt them out. While they managed to escape with their lives and their 9 children, they lost all their possessions, forcing them to start over. But that pioneering spirit was there. While they got back on their feet, through share farming on Hazelwood Station, hand milking over 100 cows per day, everyone pitched in. Unfortunately, misfortune struck the plucky family when 4 of the girls came down with diphtheria. Diphtheria causes a thick covering of the back of the throat. It can lead to difficulty breathing, heart failure, paralysis, and even death. CDC recommends vaccines for infants, children, teens, and adults to prevent diphtheria. So, there was no availability for the other 7 family members to become ill, as they were still recovering their financial and property losses. The girls were sent to a private hospital in Morwell, which sounded more like a house. And they were kind of put in a bungalow away from everybody else because of the contagious nature of their disease. They were only there for a short time while they waited for an exclusive carriage on the Gippsland train service. Emmy, the eldest daughter, comforted and cared for the other 3 girls during this time. She passed away in the Gippsland Hospital sale. The other 3 made a full recovery and were able to return home. Shortly after the girls were back, they bundled themselves in their possessions they had accrued on horse and cart, heading off to the hill. It was beginning to boom due to the promise of coal mines and the proposed power station. In a joint venture with Mr. Thompson, the Mears opened a grocery shop. Ding, ding, ding. From the description, it sounded like it was the go-to shop. They sold absolutely everything. Mrs. Mears ran a boarding house where people who came to town stayed there, even married couples, while they sorted out their accommodation. It was a place considered of excellent community spirit. The new boarders would help in the shop. The table was always full and fun at dinner time. Mrs. Mears advertised her boarding house in the local paper in 1919. There was no address, it just says, "Meals at all hours, miners specially catered for. Visitors to the mine met at Morwell Railway Station by arrangement. Phone number 4. In 1921, it was 6. Things disappeared out of the shop despite Mr. Mears installing a rustic burglar alarm, rigging floorboards to ring a bell. It was difficult to avoid triggering it. Either some people managed to avoid it, or they had ghosts, because lollies would vanish. They started other business ventures, such as a restaurant in the Brown Coal Mine Township, which Ada Mears managed while she was at home. In 1941, Harry and Fanny Mears celebrated their golden wedding anniversary on Christmas Day. The happy couple received congratulations from all over the state. Their children organized the banquet at their house. It was the first Christmas that Fanny didn't cook the Christmas meal. Tables were loaded with food, where everyone enjoyed the day, especially the plum pudding. Sadly, in 1945, Mrs. Mears passed away, leaving 88-year-old Harry behind. So in those early days of settlement, they lived in tents and huts in bush so thick, family with young children were worried they'd never find the little ones if they ran off. So residents resorted to tying young'uns to trees while they got on with the job of building this community. The tents stopped flapping as the wind finally died down. Mrs. Mayer was home with Herbert Maxwell Mayer, her 7-year-old son. Her husband, Herbert, was at work with the SEC. The bush nearby was being cleared, the sound of axes chopping and trees falling, thudding to the ground, filled the air. The young mother decided it was time to follow the axemen and collect firewood. This was legal back then. The young mother and her son went out to collect. They'd been at it for some time, when suddenly a buzzing sound filled the air. Herbert looked around as his mother was shaking, standing on a power line that had fallen in the wind. He grabbed for his mother while he screamed for help. He also screamed in pain as the electricity running through her body burned his face. Forestry workers came to his aid. They worked for 3 hours trying to revive his mother to no avail. The family received £200 in compensation for her death. However, they could not remain in the Yawn area and moved away. Shop owners of the Brown Coal Mine touched many people's lives within the community. We're first going to discuss J.P. Grace, who was the manager of Mr. Hall's Brown Coal Mine General Store. In 1918, a new owner bought the store and decided to self-manage the business. Mr. Grace wasn't required. As a result, he was planning on packing up his family and leaving the Brown Coal Mine. The people said they'd miss him desperately. They'd enjoyed having him there. Filled with community spirit, JP decided to stay. He started a hairdressing business, specializing in El Fino, a Danish product for curing baldness. He also had products to clear up scurf and dandruff, servicing your lawn and the Brown Coal Mine. I told you we're going to meet the butcher. The butcher of 1918 was Mr. E.C. Savage, who operated in a wooden shack on Shop Street, located in the old part of town near the mine. He added groceries later. He ran the butchery with his wife, Christina Jane, with whom he had 7 children. They are another pioneering family of the Brown Coal Mine. There is a street named after them in the hills. An interesting story, which I'm not sure what to make of it, and it was 1918, is that under observation, Mr. Savage shot 2 dogs and also installed a new sausage processor. The newspaper article assures the two things were not related. There were some other articles written at this time about dogs destroying gardens. I'm not sure if this was a correlation or anything, but it is about the only other thing I could find out about dogs. It was a different time, and they didn't feel the need to justify it or write an explanation. I'm so sorry, dog lovers. Now, the baker. In 1923, T.H. Meadows built the original bakery on the edge of the mine. Well, in 1923, to be fair, it wasn't exactly on the edge of the mine. In 1928, their phone number was 8, and they were listed as bakers. In 1938, the paper called them philanthropists, and the town threw a big party with lots of entertainment as they handed the business over to their son, Bert Meadows. Later that same year, T.H. Meadows was honoured at the Central Gippsland branch of bread manufacturers of the Victorian Country Association in the Morwell Town Hall, which is the current La Trobe Regional Gallery on Commercial Road. In 1950, the mine slip claimed the bakery and nearly the life of Bert's young female apprentice. She was the first to notice the land slipping as she was leaving the bakery on an errand. She rushed back into the bakery to warn the others, running so fast she slid towards the back of the shop and out the open back door. Grabbing onto the edge of the mine, she was rescued and saved by her colleagues, who were also saved by her advance warning. Due to the mine collapse in 1950, the town changed as regulations prevented building within a certain distance of the mine. 3 years later, Bert rebuilt the bakery in John Street, Yallourn North, which is still there behind the Yallourn North Hotel. Later that year, a dinner and presentation held in Bert's honour by the Central Gippsland branch of bread manufacturers of the Victorian Country Associations was held. Again in the Morwell Town Hall. An exciting tidbit about the Meadows is that Doug, his 11-year-old son, was bitten by a snake while building a bonfire for Guy's Fawkes Night 15 years earlier. He had stayed under observation at the Yallourn Hospital after quick-thinking first aid saved his life. He lived. In 1941, Harry Meadow, Bert's brother, was appointed to the Morwell Court as a judge. Before this, he worked as a licensed second-hand dealer, otherwise known as a pawnbroker, with a shop in Shop Street, Brown Coal Mine. The family also built three houses on North Road, which are still standing today. Actually, they're really cute and they all look exactly the same and stand right next to each other. One of the larger-than-life personalities of the Brown Coal Mine during 1918 was Billy Green, a bantamweight boxer. His signature look was a full-brimmed Wild West hat atop his 5-foot-nothing frame. He looked like he belonged in America's Wild West, rather than rural Victoria. However quirky his look was, avid storytelling endeared him to all the Brown Coal Mine residents. Billy was nicknamed the Doctor, not because he had a TARDIS, but because of a legend whispered around the camp and retold by the other locals. He had cured a 12-month-old from an illness the general practitioners had given up on by feeding the baby a bottle of beer. Surprisingly, in the legend, the baby recovered. All we can do is hope that was a tall tale. I want to pause and focus on Elsa because coming by information about women during this time is quite challenging. At the same time, they kept things running and fed people and were rarely talked about unless they died in mysterious ways. Elsa is one of the few exceptions. I took some time in 2016 to spend some time at the Melbourne University Library to go through the boxes of things that Elsa touched and created. It was an extraordinary afternoon. Contained in those boxes are her handwritten compositions. Sometimes the name of the composer is crossed out, where she then put her name. One of the names was Carillon, which is the name of an organ that has pedals all over it. I believe these were pseudonyms she was using, as all the handwriting was the same. Another alias she tried out was the Toreador, which is also the name of a famous song. It's renowned. I believe you'll recognize it when you hear it. She probably played with pseudonyms, as many women did, to avoid their work being overlooked. However, she was the daughter of a famous composer and may have had additional support and resources. Maybe she was shy or wanted to test out if she could stand alone, out of her father's shadow. And that she could. Elsa's composing work won competitions, although the paper rarely reported what the name of the song was. In her private works, she's written them on there. One she's titled Birali. She won another award for Munya and first prize for I'm Crying Like a Baby for the Moon. Although in her notes, first prize is crossed off and replaced with two. The Melbourne Cheese and Bread Club was a music publishing and competition club. In Elsa's songs is a song with a name attributed Matawan, although it was crossed out on the front page. This is a song about the Melbourne Cheese and Bread Club, about being a paid-up member. During the 50s, Minties ran several music competitions. I'm not sure if Elsa ever entered her song in the Minties competitions, but she did write a song talking about lollies that included the line, "Moments like these, you need Minties." While living in Yarram, she became interested in trivia. By 1956, she was so good at it, she was chosen by the city team to compete against the country team. Which was a good choice, because she won this competition. Elsa outlived her husband by 34 years and passed away herself in 1980. And I wonder where Elsa was talking about when she wrote the song that asks to be buried in her forest home beneath a tree. Probably is Yarram, because she spent more time there than the brown coal mine. The lyrics are, beneath the tree, the soul of me, and there the forest spirits, a spirit will be the soul of me. Elsa was a Gippsland girl who graced the brown coal mine with music and a song for a season.